Welcome to the Successful Athletes Podcast presented by Trainer Road, where we interview successful athletes to make you a faster cyclist. And this week we're joined by Jessica Kipfer, and she's up in Waterloo, Ontario. How are you doing, Jessica?
I'm great, thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to do this. We've actually, we've internet known each other for quite some time now. and it's cool to do this. Your partner actually was the one that suggested you as one of the guests, and I couldn't agree more. I thought that it was a fantastic fit. So I'm really excited to talk about a lot of different things because you don't just ride a bike. You are very good at riding a bike. You're very good at multi-sport activities, whether that's a blend of like duathlon or full-on triathlon, or any mix of that. And then also like adventure racing and running exclusively. We've got a ton of stuff to talk about. So it's going to be really cool.
Looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Before we get into this too far, I do want to say, if you're listening to this right now, you want to find out more information about the podcast. And if you want to share your story and how Trainer Road has helped you, you can do so at trainerroad.com/SAP. You can go there and there's a spot for you to fill it all out. Check out the latest episode and more. So please do that. And with that said, Jessica, can you give us some sort of context for your life? What do you do for work? And what are the dependencies that end up taking time away from training or that you have to balance with training?
I am the director of communications at a national home improvement retailer. So I lead a team where we do government relations, public relations, internal and external communications, bilingual communications. So that means that I do a lot of long days at the office. So that sometimes it creates a bit of Jenga with my schedule of trying to fit all of that in with everything else in my life. So it's important. I love it. I love it all, but it definitely keeps me busy.
Yeah. So with that, what sort of time are you allowed to dedicate to your training?
Well, it's interesting. I don't really believe in work-life balance anymore. It really just becomes like a work-life blend, and it's always a flex. So every week I'm looking at my schedule and during the summer, if there's a lighter day, then okay, I'll take a couple hours in the morning and extend a ride. Whereas there's days where I'm at the office till 9 or 10 at night, which would, mean a really long day. So I do try to make my longer, more intense workouts. The key workouts would be first thing in the morning. So when I'm planning my week, I always make sure critical workouts are before the madness of the day starts.
That's got to help you. So, because this is leading toward a question here that I have, because this frustrates a lot of athletes when you have an unpredictable schedule or just variable schedule like this, mm-hmm. where you can't just always have 6 a.m. blocked off or 5 p.m. blocked off. How do you deal with the frustrations and setbacks with that? Because I'm sure that they arise. I'm sure that you have something planned and then you have to take it off the calendar because of work.
A lot, but again, it comes back to that blend is, there are times where, there might be a media crisis or right now we're in the middle of COVID. So, navigating all of the government restrictions and helping all of our retailers, that takes up a lot of my time, but understanding that, there's going to be a time too, where I can flex that a little bit more to dedicate toward training, but not allowing, being derailed to take away from consistency. So I might not be able to get 100% of my workouts done if it gets derailed, but hitting that minimum 80% mark of just week over week and not, having that emotional reaction of that I'm missing one workout is going to make me be a terrible athlete. It's, that more repeated consistency over time is going to lead me to be successful. And really just planning is making sure that, I had mentioned earlier, work out in the morning if you can, if that's what works in the schedule, where the time that you know is yours. And then also there certainly is times where you just say, I have this appointment and I have to, honor that. I don't miss key workouts. So it really is just blending it all together. When it inevitably does happen, just understanding that it really overall it's consistency that helps. It's not the one workout that's going to make or break you as an athlete.
it's so easy to lose perspective on that in the moment and to be like, oh, like, you know, I've missed this workout and why should I even continue? You know, yeah. And if you stand back and look at it with your perspective, then it really helps because it keeps it, once again, all in perspective, that what really matters is that consistency. So how did you get into sport in general? And I should say endurance sports like this. A lot of us listening to this are adult onset athletes in the sense that we become athletic with cycling, triathlon, or anything else once we get into our later years. Were you athletic as a kid? And when did you start cycling in particular?
I was not athletic as a kid. I guess I fit your listener profile. truthfully, I was raised conservative Mennonite. So it was actually, you know, competition wasn't even encouraged. So didn't do team sports. I fell in love with running first. And then, you know, a couple years in, I actually had a boyfriend who bought me, you know, it was a rickety bike. And I was, well, you know, like, I'll give it a try. Ended up absolutely falling in love with it. And I believe one of your prior guests had the same story where she continued on and her boyfriend sort of waned off. But I fell in love with it. And, you know, it's been something that has been a huge part of my life since. So I think I started cycling maybe 2014, 2015.
Mm. And then, so cycling began, was it instantly like multi-sport or were you like cycling focused? Like, were you racing or what was the intent with cycling?
So truthfully, cycling was sort of a, you know, I did fun road rides. I did challenges. You know, one day my friend and I decided we're going to try and ride 225 kilometers in a day. And it sort of was in the background to supplement my running for a really long time. And it was actually triathlon that truly stuck before cycling did. There was an opportunity to train for a half Ironman in 2016. So I said, you know, I'll give it a try and then I'll return to just running. Well, I didn't return to just running. In fact, I through the process of training for that half Ironman, I fell in love with cycling solely as an individual sport. So I started, you know, I searched for a local team and started racing, tried road racing and crit racing. And it just opened my eyes to the fact that there's so much more than just one bike to ride. And there's so many different communities within cycling alone. And that I just have become more and more entrenched since then.
Yeah, because I see you riding mountain bikes, gravel bikes, road bikes, you TT-focused stuff. I see you also doing running and then all the blends of multi-sport. And then also you do adventure racing. So out of all of those, do you have a favorite? Since really like the, it seems like all of these are just a vehicle to accomplish something greater for you. But is there a favorite amongst all of those?
That's a little bit like asking me to choose my favorite child.
Yeah, I'm asking you that one for sure.
I would say running is my very first love. It's what I started doing. And it's something that sort of is the backbone of, you know, building my endurance. But the day that I couldn't decide whether I wanted to go on a bike or a run made me realize that cycling was, you know, my newest love, really. So I would say it's a tie between cycling and running for sure. If I had to choose of all the different types of cycling, you know, I love road riding. I love the fact that you can race. I love the crits. I love the, you know, the fact that you can do coffee shop rides. It's so social. And it's seeing a place on a bike for the first time when you're traveling is in my mind the best way to go. So I would have to say road riding.
Awesome. Cool. So let's talk about training now. Let's get into Trainer Road in particular. When did you start using Trainer Road? And then do you remember what your FTP was at that point and then what you've come to now?
Yeah. So I started using Trainer Road when I was training for my first half Ironman. Truthfully, I had no concept of what structured training was. And it was really my first introduction to it, which was fantastic because of Trainer Road, I was able to podium my very first half Ironman. And it,
way to
it
go.
So my first FTP was, I believe it was 180. Like it was I think that that's around the range that it was. Mm-hmm. And then my current FTP is, you know, I'm still building. I've just come off an off season. Right now it's around 225, but I normally race at around 250. So it's definitely had, it's taken me, and every year I think I messaged you about this the other day, but because of Trainer Road, every year I consistently and incrementally get a little better. So right now we were doing your new tool that you've introduced where you can compare seasons. I'm where I was in April 2020 now. So it's fun to watch how every year you just layer on a little bit more.
Yeah, it's and that can be like a frustration point, I think, for a lot of people when we catch ourselves comparing ourselves with others. Because I know of Jane over here, and Jane has a 200 watt FTP and I'm at 180. Why can't I just be like Jane? And when we get into that situation, it can get really frustrating. Whereas, like you said, if it's cumulative and you're measuring against yourself, and it's that just, you know, year over year consistency, that's where we see the improvements. I mean, I'm sure that you're in this position where you know that you're not going to see a 280 watt FTP, you know, from 1 month to the next, but those small gains are really valuable still. And even though they're smaller over time, because we get closer and closer to potential, whether that's defined by genetics or just the logistics of our lives, they become more valuable. Every watt gained, you know, it's something that I really look forward to. So please go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's that consistency too. So like, I don't ever get disheartened. It will never be as fast as it was at the beginning, which is never as fast as I would like. But even if it's a 5 watt increase every build, if you can do that over the course of a season, suddenly you can have a 20 watt increase over, you know, a program, which is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. What an impressive job, by the way, on your first half Ironman. That's super cool. Can you tell me of the things that you did? So this is just in terms of learnings for those that are listening. What are the things that you did wrong in that race that you resolved to be better at in the following races thereafter?
I think in a lot of ways that I tried to just wing it. So I did prepare. There was no way that I didn't prepare. But one thing that getting into triathlon that I maybe didn't wrap my head around properly was all the really small things that you need to think about in order to make the day. And this isn't isolated just to triathlon, it's to all sports, but, you know, making sure that you've tested all your nutrition on race day. I think that day I just took whatever was on course on top of what I had. I tried all new food on race day. Like it ended up working out, but it was uncomfortable. In terms of the swim, I'm not a great swimmer. I would say, you asked my favorite earlier, swimming is my least favorite. So I actually began the race feeling very panicked, had a hard time breathing. I would have practiced, you know, open water swimming a lot more. So often triathletes have a lot of opportunity to do their training indoor pools. But making sure you spend the time outside in the water first. But the one thing that I did do right is I just had an absolute blast. Anytime that I do a brand new type of racing for the first time, it's sort of my free pass to figure it all out. So I often, my first race experience is among my favorites because it's no pressure. You just sort of take it back, enjoy, and just, you know, celebrate all the hard training that you've put into building up to the day.
What a good way to look at it. That way you can focus on process goals and then let your performance on race day just be a manifestation of that rather than fretting about holding yourself to something else. That's a super good perspective. So can we talk a little bit about the running side of things? You had started with running, but then in terms of triathlon, how did running transform for you once you were doing it in a multi-sport context?
Well, it feels a lot different when you are doing it with many, many hours of cycling in your legs. And that was a huge thing. I mean, the term brick run is it has to just be referring to how your legs feel. To understanding of, you know, it's running in a triathlon is a completely different sport than just running alone as a singular sport. So just learning how, you know, your stride needs to be different. It's often you can't open up your stride as much as you could in a regular run. Your cadence often is higher, I find, just as you work out the long cycle that you've just done. but it really is making sure that you spend a lot of time running with hard bike rides prior, and just getting used to how that feels so that you're not shocked and that your body eventually does adapt. And you're going to have those runs that don't feel great. But more and more as you practice, those runs become a lot easier, and suddenly you just start getting a lot faster once you're comfortable with it.
And how about the swim? Because you mentioned that was your least favorite one. So how did you get good at swimming? Or I should say, whatever you deem to be, you know, how did you improve? Because you just said it's, you know, being your least favorite, but how did you improve?
So I definitely have improved in it a lot. For me, it really is about the community. That's one of my favorite parts about sport, is the people that are in the community. So I surround myself with some really great swimmers. It's a really fun group of people, whether we're training indoors at the university, or we have a group of people that go out and we do drills in outdoor water, and you just make it a social event on top of, you know, perfecting a sport that maybe isn't your first love.
Yeah. Now, and on the cycling side of things, I see that you use group workouts pretty regularly too. And the reason I'm bringing that up is the common thread here with community and enjoying the social aspect of cycling and everything else. So who do you train with? And then how, and just an opportunity to give them a shout out, so to speak, all your supporters, but then also what do you get from that group aspect? Like, why is that? Cause I recognize that it's a recurring role in your training program.
So there's so many different things in that. For one, when I look at my schedule and you say it's a constant prioritization with, you know, balancing work and all the training, it's, you know, it's being athletic is a lifestyle I've chosen. So a lot of my really close friends are athletes who have chosen a similar lifestyle. So that's how we spend our time. So our group workouts is often how we'll spend time with friends. And so there are a number of different communities that I'll cycle with, whether it's actually some of my fellow female competitors that I'll race on the race course, and we can train together during, you know, the off season or base building season. The gym that I'm a part of, Limitless Performance, they have an endurance arm. So they have a group of triathletes who train together during the, we have a weekly group ride. And then my running club actually has a cycling group, health and performance. So we'll train together. And then my cycling team. So really it's a wide variety of different communities that I'll ride with. And you know, it's always someone new to be able to challenge yourself with.
That's cool. I love seeing the screenshots you take of your early morning workouts with your group workouts on Trainer Road. So that's super, it's motivating to me. So whenever I see those, it's awesome.
You don't fail a workout when you have everyone else looking at you and working just as hard as you. It's just motivating. And you find that you can have conversations during the interval breaks, and it just helps the workout fly by. Community's huge.
Yeah, it's so true that there's part of us that kind of feels like a lot of the time we have to put all the pressure on ourselves to be able to accomplish the task ahead. And while some good can come from that, and you do need to definitely be the person that is driving that forward, you can't just leave yourself alone and then think that you'll magically be, you know, somehow rise to the occasion to be able to overcome all tasks. Having people around you is a good thing to have. So yes. Yeah, it's huge support systems.
Exactly. They reinforce the habits that you've built. And what's been really interesting is COVID has completely transformed what I thought my motivations were. So I'm very goal focused. So I always assumed that, you know, I'm building towards a race. So what was really fascinating was having essentially races wiped out, at least, you know, for all of Canadian races have been canceled. I know there are some happening in the States, but we're just needing to find different sources of motivation and, you know, new challenges. I took up, you know, long gravel rides this summer, and it's more how far can you go, you know, and adding all these different challenges with your community, which has been a really fun motivator beyond just racing.
Yeah. What's the gravel like there up in Ontario where you're at?
We have awesome trails. There's really, really cool routes. There's one I did this summer called the Cannonball 300. So you can do 300 kilometers. It takes you right along the river. There's there's just so many rivers that you can ride along. There's one called the Butter Tart 700. Strongly recommend that one as well. But no, there's really great gravel riding here. And it's something that, you know, I've had a gravel bike for a while, but it's something that I really was able to explore because of COVID, actually.
I feel like Canada's actually gravel heaven, even though it's known for mountain biking. I bet it's gravel heaven because it probably has more gravel roads than paved roads, just with how expansive the country is up there. So,
yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's wonderful. It's
a beautiful place too. Absolutely beautiful. Okay, so I want to change the page a bit here because I want to talk about another form of racing that you do, which is adventure racing. So can you explain what that is for some people that may not know? And then we'll get into how you train for that and how the other, you know, disciplines fold into all that.
Sure. So adventure racing is another multi-sport endurance type of racing. It's based with, you know, orienteering. So you often don't know the course before the race starts. And you need to travel from checkpoint to checkpoint. And, you know, you have what's something called a passport that often you will stamp. And just to prove, you hand that passport in at the end. And the team that navigates it, there's a lot of strategy involved through the orienteering. But the disciplines of sport involved in it are, you know, everything ranging from rock climbing to, you know, canoeing or kayaking, mountain biking, trail running, and I think I've listed all of them. Yes.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, so there is a lot. But you know, it, because the races are, you know, I believe the sprint distance is considered 6 hours. And then the world championships is up to 6 or 7 days. So having multiple different sports is, you know, you're just about done with your bike by the time you actually get to go on the water. And by the time you're just ready to burn your boat, then suddenly you get to run. So it's like, goodness, there's multiple sports.
Holy cow, that's serious. So how did you get into that? And then did your experience, I assume the fitness that you had from those other sports translated to it? But what did you find yourself feeling like you had to relearn everything going into that sport, or just kind of pick up where you left off with the other sports?
There's a bunch of things in what you just asked me. Really, firstly, I find that, you know, in doing all these different sports, they all work together. I can take something from, you know, I'm a better mountain biker because I adventure race. I'm a better crit racer triathlete because I crit race. But, you know, the way that I got into adventure racing was I had an acquaintance reach out and ask me if I would consider doing an adventure race. I tend to be a yes person. So I said, of course, I'd love to try it. And so signed up. One of the rules with adventure racing is that, you know, often in a team of four, to be, you know, an official team, you need to have at least one female. So, he was recruiting to see, you know, he knew that I was an endurance athlete. He knew I loved cycling and running, and thought that I might translate well into this sport. And I did, I loved it. It was a completely new level of challenge to do, you know, 72 hours of racing in Florida. And, you know, it's the sleep deprivation and it's the team building and it's trying to put all these different pieces together. It's a fascinating type of racing. And one of the really interesting things about adventure racing is you truly find your limits. And I think that that's often why a lot of athletes do what they do is, you know, where are your limits? And it's definitely a more aerobic way to find them. But, you know, when you add that sleep deprivation, sometimes hunger, and, you know, needing to work together with a team and physical exhaustion together, you find out, you know, how far you can go. The cool thing is you find that you can keep going. So where you think your limits are there, you can go beyond that. So I think that was the greatest thing that adventure racing taught me is that where I thought my limits are, I can go a lot further than that. So it brings a lot more grit to all my other sports.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I'm sure that translates to the other ones. Is there anything else that you feel, I mean, like orienteering, for example, is like a unique skill to that and kayaking. But has it helped you in other ways as well, when you're on the bike or on the run?
I think, you know, especially I started adventure racing when I was a very new mountain biker. And I found that with mountain biking, my greatest inhibitor was the fact that I got into my head. So, you know, I'd be going down a steep hill and I'd tense up and I'd be like squeezing my brakes. And whether this was safe or not, when you are racing for many, many days and you have a heavy pack on your back, you almost stop caring. And so you start just, it becomes automatic and you start relaxing into it and just letting it happen. And suddenly you start realizing, oh, I can do that. I can do that single track. I just did it. I sort of switched on to automatic and just doing it over and over. It actually expedited my growth as a mountain biker. And I got a lot more comfortable. So that was one key thing. And then I think the number one thing that it taught me as well was, you know, preparation and learning how to problem solve. So it's not if, but when. It's called adventure racing for a reason. The adventure part is that things go wrong. So when I'm in a race, especially a longer endurance event, it translates that, you know, when I walk into an Ironman, I've already problem solved for anything that could happen. So if I get a flat tire, I don't panic. I realize that, you know, it's going to take me 5 minutes and 36 seconds to change this flat tire because I prepared and practiced. And that was sort of the lessons that adventure racing taught me, is prepare for the worst to happen always. And I took that into all my other sports, is what could go wrong? How do I solve that before it goes wrong in the race, so that once I'm racing, I'm just executing. And then you're just calmly switching from plan A to plan B to plan C. And then you don't have an emotional reaction. It doesn't take energy away and you're just executing.
How do you balance all of this? Like, do you train specifically for bike and run, and then you let the other things kind of fall in where they may, or do you kind of like segment your year into training for adventure racing or training for something else? I know last year is tricky with all the events being canceled, but how do you fit it all in? Because as a, even like a road cyclist and a mountain biker, there are times in the season when I may have those two different genres of events going on. And I do feel a bit conflicted, like which ones do I pick and how much do I allocate to whichever discipline I'm focusing on?
Well, it's an endless game of prioritization. And it's really, you know, what I sit at the beginning of the year and say, what is success to me? What are my actual sort of mountaintop moments that I want to peak for? And then what else am I doing for fun? Because at the end of the day, I do this because I love it. I do it because of the community. I love to challenge myself and reach limits. I'm not a professional, so I want to be the best I can be. But for me, that also means doing as many as I can. So, you know, often that will look like, you know, in the spring, I want to focus on road biking and crits. And so I'll really, really get ready for, you know, longer road races. And then I'll move into sort of that will transition into adding longer rides. I'll go into road racing comes first, then crits. See, even I get confused. And then we move into triathlon sort of as midsummer. So I build on that cycling fitness. And then I slowly ramp up running. And then from triathlon, I'll move into more of a run focus. I always take an off season, and I don't do a long adventure race every year. Truthfully, those are very taxing. So I try to do those every, you know, 2 to 3 years for really big adventure race, and plan them around somewhere really fun that I want to go. So I find that, you know, prioritizing and then, you know, understanding that you won't be the best at everything. You can just choose to be really good at a few things.
Awesome. Another question, because a lot of this podcast focuses in on what we're best at, right? Mm-hmm. But I also want to ask you the question, what aren't you good at in the training process? How have you learned that? And what have you done to improve against that? Because all of us, it's tough. A lot of the time we like to turn a blind eye to what we're not good at and just focus on what we are already good at. However, it's super important, I think, even just from a relatability perspective, to cover that. So what aren't you good at in the training process? How have you discovered it and what are you doing to change it?
So you mean the sports itself, or just, you know, the preparation part of it, or just a little bit of everything?
It can be everything, but like a good example, I'll share like a personal example for me. One of the things that I'm bad at is prioritization. And then as a result, what ends up happening is that my workouts just get shifted. They get ran down that calendar until it's too late. And then they bump out into the next day. Another thing I'm bad at too, to give you kind of a range of how it's like a broad spectrum. Another thing I'm bad at is I'm bad at sustained work. It's difficult for me to do. And that's not something that is proven to be a long-term barrier. I can train around it and I can train specifically for that. But that's something that I'm bad at. I was really bad at nutrition as well. There's a lot of things I'm bad at, but I was really bad at nutrition.
Now you're fine.
Yeah, and I figured that out, and I feel like that's one of actually my relative strengths now. So kind of anything that you feel like has been a big frustration point as you've trained as an athlete, or maybe just a big learning point where you're like, oh wow, now that I do this, I'm much better.
Okay. Yes. So definitely rest is something that I struggle with. I hate resting. I'm terrible at relaxing. I am one of those people that will sit down on the couch and I will pick up a book or something. And then 3 seconds later, I'm popping up because I forgot something. And then just walking, sitting down, popping back up again. So just sitting and recovery. I would say the recovery piece has always been hard for me. Truthfully, I've definitely grown as an athlete in this, but what I used to do is almost wear as a badge of pride of the fact that, you know, I could, you know, work a long day, do a really hard workout, sleep like 5 to 6 hours and do it all over again. And, you know, so many people, including myself, have worn that as a badge, and learning that's burnout. That's nothing to be proud of. So shifting that. And I've definitely worked relentlessly at that. The sleep is actually one of the things I'm most proud of what I've improved. Also, balancing out, we talked a little bit about work. I mean, my job, I am running around the office often in high heels all day. You translate that with all the sports that I do. I have a very high stress job. I love it. It's a lot of fun to me, but it also, you know, whether you feel stressed or not, you're absorbing that stress all day long. So again, that's why I do my workouts in the morning. And I believe you've talked about this even on the Trainer Road podcast, but you know, when your mind is full, you know, they've done scientific studies of if you're trying to do a workout and do math problems at the same time, your performance is so affected. So trying to do my workouts when I can give my best. But I truly am terrible at resting. And so I've spent a lot of time trying to learn, you know, how to trick that and build rest into my days and make it a part of my regular routine. And then in terms of sports that I struggle with, you know, swimming, it's sort of the, you know, when the chicken, the egg, do I not do it as much because I don't like it? And then I'm bad at it because I don't do it often.
Yeah.
But it's something that, you know, we talked about it earlier about making it fun. That's definitely something that I was weaker at. And truthfully, there is still mountain biking continues to be one that I need to work at. There's a lot more people in my area that would road ride than mountain bike. I've definitely built a lot of really great friendships with strong mountain bikers, but mountain biking is a real social thing. So if I need to choose between, you know, going out on a really hard road ride or mountain biking by myself, I love the social aspect. So I will go do a workout with someone every time. So,
sure.
So those are some examples of sports that I maybe could improve on. And then definitely, you know, some areas that I can focus on in improving.
Yeah. Hopefully that, and thanks for sharing like how you improved each one of those. Cause hopefully that helps somebody see this, like it's a productive view of oneself to basically say, how can I improve? Here's a solution. And to hear that from another perspective is super helpful. Along the lines of one of the things I was bad at on nutrition, what does your diet look like? You train a lot. You have a high level activity, a large amount of calories that you're burning all the time because you are doing these different sports. So, and then of course a demanding job too. On top of that, your brain is just a glucose hog all day with that sort of work. So what do you fuel like when you're going throughout a typical day or week?
I eat a lot. I definitely eat a lot. I always have two breakfasts. So, you know, one, I will have an early morning workout at around 6 o'clock. So I always get up super early, probably like 4:30 or 5. and I will have like a carb heavy breakfast just to prepare, often a cup of coffee, and then hop on in the bike and do a hard workout. Like this morning I did Jepsen, is if that's how you pronounce it.
Oh yeah, that's a hard one.
It's horrible.
It's hard.
So because I did Threshold this morning, I was hungry all day. So I really, I don't track anything. I've done the tracking in the past. I've learned the habits and sort of built the habits around it. So it's become really automatic to me. Right now I'm at a point where I'll just listen to what my body's telling me. When I'm hungry, I eat. I eat a lot more carbs when I'm training hard. I eat a lot more protein when I need to be recovering. But truly around workouts, if it's 75 minutes or more, I will always fuel. And I try to aim for, you know, at least 40 grams of carbs an hour. And I find, you know, fueling during workouts has made a big difference. And I almost treat those like meals. It's always being mindful of the amount of activity. Sometimes it's easy to forget as it becomes such a part of your life. It feels like, you can forget that that workout happened, but realizing that you need to fuel to be successful. So, I just view nutrition like another one of those levers that I can pull to be successful. So I love food. I eat a lot of it. I love cooking too, which really helps. Mm. So I make a lot of food and I make a lot of it from scratch. So, just making food a big part of my life and not, you know, I find building a really good relationship with food as an athlete is really critical in order to be successful.
Yeah. And those sound like a really healthy ways to do it in the sense that you learned what you needed to from the measuring side of things. And then from there, it's about listening to your body, fueling the work, allowing yourself the room to be able to take in those nutrients that you need to be able to train and to keep it up.
Yeah. I don't restrict. And then every off season, what I'll do is like, I don't change anything when I'm in peak training. And then you hit your off season, what I always will do is something called optimal health. And it's actually with the gym that I do. And we do like a blood panel. So you look at what do you have any deficiencies that you need to focus on when you're not doing hard training? And then you just make adjustments for the next season during that time. Hmm. And then, you know, do I need to change anything up in my diet to make my diet optimal for the next season? If so, I start this now and have that implemented before I start training in earnest. So it's awesome. More phasing it in to make sure that you're timing it right.
That's a good approach to it. I like it. Let's touch on the recovery side of things, because you mentioned that was one of the things you're bad at, resting and relaxing, which is pretty common for a lot of us as athletes. So what have you done to get better at resting and recovering?
I think it helps that, you know, my boyfriend and coach has just made it a non-negotiable. Like it helps that we live in the same household. So like I'm not going to stay up when he goes to bed at, you know, I mean, we'll sometimes be in bed by 8:30 PM. Mm-hmm. We get 8 hours every night, 8 to 10 hours every single night. Again, if you view sleep as another lever that you can pull to make sure that you're successful. I don't do anything special for recovery. I don't use any, tools outside of the traditional, like stretching, rolling. But I find that sleep is number one. This one doesn't often lie in the same camp as recovery, but I find, hydration. One of the things that I identified is that I was not drinking enough water by far. So upping that to drinking about 9 cups a day, every single day as a baseline was incredible in how I felt and performed as an athlete. So really it's just like eating enough, sleeping enough, and making sure that I'm drinking enough water. I do some stretching and mobility, and then, you know, making sure that I'm taking time to just recharge. The staying off my feet is the hard part, but, you know, I find that if I can keep those core principles under control, my recovery is normally very, very high.
Awesome. How do you adjust if you don't feel rested when you go into a workout? Because you have so many of them going on. What's your typical approach? Are you the sort of person that if you feel that you aren't rested once you get into that workout, you turn it down in terms of intensity? Or do you just take that time off and then move forward into the next day?
It really depends on what the workout is. If I'm going into one of my core workouts that are actually fundamental for my success and sort of a building block, I'll make sure that I would, you know, move that to another day when I was actually rested. If it's, you know, an aerobic 45 to 1 minute run or 45 to 1 hour run, I would just do it. And because I do think that there occasionally is benefit to for the sports that I do to be able to train while tired. One of the pieces of feedback I got when I learned about adventure racing, you were asking about this earlier, of like, I asked incredulously, like, how do you train for this sport? And one of the tongue-in-cheek answers I got was, you know, after a long day of work, when you're tired and you don't want to do anything, go on a run, because that's, you know, you build that ability to push on when you're tired. Now I say that carefully because I definitely, like, burnout is a real thing and you want to be careful that you're not, you know, overtraining. But I find that, you know, if you do it long enough, you can learn to differentiate between what is going to be harmful to push through and what should I put off and make sure I'm doing when I'm, you know, fresher.
Awesome. Going off script a little bit here in terms of the questions that I was planning on asking you, one of the things I want to ask is you've mentioned the social aspect of cycling and the different sports that you do. And you're also a female athlete and a woman in a workplace in a position that oftentimes, you know, with large companies like this sort of thing, you are, I'm sure, surrounded by a lot of men in those positions. So I view you in many respects as a person that's kind of fighting against the status quo in that regard, but then also really having that social experience within sport. So we have a lot of women that listen to this podcast that in endurance sport in general, but particularly in cycling, there just is not enough representation for that. I don't know if you've experienced any sort of feeling like you did not belong, because it's very common to hear that you did not belong. It's a man's world, and I'm using air quotes here, and you were just a guest in it, that sort of a feeling. Do you have any advice for whether it's men or women on how to make the sport more inclusive, to maybe break down those barriers and just make it more welcoming for people?
I'm pausing on answering this because I truthfully have had such a warm welcome from the men in the sport. I have to say it's been a phenomenal experience, from my cycling club to, you know, you're right in both sides. Like, I mean, I work in the home improvement industry. It's very male dominated. But I think that focusing on cycling specifically, I found that at least in Waterloo, Ontario, where I started cycling, they were just thrilled. And to your point, they understand that, you know, to grow a sport, you know, there's such a huge opportunity in bringing more women into the sport. And there's so many women that, you know, maybe aren't cycling because it seems intimidating or it seems that, you know, unwelcoming. But my experience was that, you know, they welcomed with open arms. They were so willing to teach. I maybe was a bit overconfident. I went into, you know, the fast groups right away and without knowing how to rotate, and they said, "Hey, now let's practice this a little bit before we take it out." But they were so good with being welcoming and kind. And then I think, you know, the more women who are willing to step into that world, I think the more that stigma that women don't, you know, aren't a part of cycling can come down. And that's a big part of why I remain in cycling, is because it's such a exhilarating sport. It's one of the things that brings me the most happiness in my life. And so being able to share that. And for many years, I worked with my local bike shop to do, you know, bike mechanics for women specifically, is, you know, that empowering of like, you can fix your own bike, and, you know, let's do group rides that are for women, and then, you know, invite them to, you know, a mixed ride, and then slowly transition, because I truthfully find that the cycling community here is very welcoming and is becoming more diverse, although it definitely, we need more women in cycling for sure.
Awesome.
I will personally do everything I can to help further women in cycling, because it's we definitely, I love the strong female competitors that I have, but I'd love to see more because it's, it is all about that community. And I find that, you know, training, it's been a privilege to be able to train with really strong male cyclists because they keep pushing me further and making me stronger. But I'd love more women in the sport. So
that's awesome. That's super refreshing to hear that with your local community like that, that is so strong and inclusive. The Chicago community has recently been featured on the podcast as well. And we've heard the same thing there. So yeah, that's awesome to hear. And I'm sure that a lot of you listening to this are the sort of people that are making the sort of changes and are driving it forward in a positive direction. That's just super cool. So I guess just finishing off here, and this is probably an invitation to blush a little bit, but you've accomplished quite a lot. Like, you've done a number of different things. You've even been to like world championship level events for age group world championships. And I believe it was duathlon. Is that correct?
Yeah. Duathlon, adventure racing, Ironman, and yeah, that's it.
That's impressive, like super impressive. And then you also, I think that you finished at a provincial level pretty high up in time trial as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are you most proud of out of all of it? And maybe it's not one of those championships, maybe it's something else, but what are you most proud of?
You know, I think one of the races that sticks out to me truthfully was my first and actually only Ironman. Sadly, because of COVID, I wasn't able to do my Ironman last year, hoping to be able to do it this year. But it really came together with all of the weaknesses that I talked about earlier, is working systematically on overcoming them. I can't tell you how hard I prepared for that race. When my coach, when I signed up, I said, I'm not doing this to finish. I want to podium. That's how I want to train. It doesn't matter ultimately how I do. I want to do everything right. So I followed a plan. The night before I raced, he said to me that he's like, I actually get more nervous than the athlete the night before a race, because when you're an athlete that's followed everything I've told you to do, if you don't succeed tomorrow, that's on me. That's not on you. And so starting it with a plan and executing and having, you know, sort of a perfect first race experience in the Ironman, really just identified to me that, you know, you can, if you put a plan in place, I mean, you will be able to have a really successful day. So I think the preparation, organization and planning ultimately led. Like, yes, I've had mountaintop moments at, you know, my world championship age group events, and each one had such special experiences, but this was truly, you know, a celebration is what that race felt like.
How cool. That's awesome. Once again, prepare and do everything you can. So then on the event, it's all, when you're focused on the process, the event just becomes the result of all of that. And you just let it be what it is. Super cool. So you hinted at this. What's next? Like, what's the next Ironman at least? Because we're planning not this coming year in 2021, but 2022, I believe that we're planning on doing triathlon as well. So
oh, I know you are. I'm so excited to see how that goes. I think you feel about swimming about the same way that I do, but
okay. Yeah.
So what's next? Truthfully, I'm going to plan, and COVID might have other plans, but I definitely have the Mont Tremblant Ironman in my sights. It's funny that it almost feels like 2020 becomes the rollover year. And now I'm doing all of 2020's races in 2021. So I've moved a lot of them. I have a half Ironman this year. And I have the full Ironman in Mont Tremblant. And I have another full Ironman in Florida. I haven't planned any adventure races, truthfully. I anything that I hadn't pre-signed up for, I sort of pumped the brakes on. A lot of it is wait and see, truthfully, but that doesn't mean that I'm not going to keep challenging myself. In many ways, COVID ended up being a bit of a blessing athletically for me, because I find that when I'm racing, I interrupt those structured training blocks. And to have 2020 be a full year of just structured blocks, What I'm really excited about is no matter what's next, I'm going to be emerging as a completely different athlete than before the pandemic, because it's, you know, that consistency of not being interrupted and working on all those weaknesses. So I'm just itching to get back to racing. I miss it a lot.
That's awesome. Super cool. Well, I'm excited to see how it goes. If people want to get in touch with you and follow to see how it goes for them as well, what's the best way they could do that?
Probably Instagram. I'm Laces and Lattes is my handle. So I love to hear. I mean, there's so many successful athletes that you've featured. It's so I'd love to see everyone's journeys as well. It's I'm inspired. Awesome. It's the community that really is what makes us all great athletes.
Yeah, no doubt. That's great. And we'll put the link down to Jessica's Instagram down below. And like we said at the beginning of the podcast, if you want to share your story with us, please do. We would love to hear it. You can do so at trainerroad.com/SAP. And when you go there, you can submit your story. Let us know how Trainer Road helped you achieve any level of success, whatever you deem that to be. So thanks a bunch, Jessica. We'll be in touch and all throughout the year, and it'll be exciting to see how your build goes to up to Ironman Mont Tremblant, and hopefully you can share some swim tips because I'm going to desperately need them. So
I'll follow up. I hope I can help you, but no problem.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jessica. Take care.
Take care. Thank you.